Well, in times, I know all of us go out for a walk, you know, whether in the evening, the morning. We look around, we see the animals, the birds singing. We notice the clouds, the trees. But lately, this time of year, you see a lot of decorations, don't you? With the various holidays of man, I've seen all sorts of things over the years. Sometimes it's the normal, and other times you're shocked, like, wow, somebody did all that work and stores all that to put it out for this time. And so I've seen houses, of course, decorated with skulls and tombstones. I've seen billboards that, as we were driving last year from here over to St. Pete, you know, a big billboard said Screamageddon instead of Armageddon. And so they just almost take these things and make fun out of it. But you think about how sad it is. And then the TV commercials, some of the commercials I've seen lately, I have to literally turn my head away because it's so disgusting of what they promote in the commercial, thinking it's fun and everybody wants to see it or go there to be scared, but it's pretty sad. You know, I grew up in the church, so as a young boy, I remember my parents on Halloween night, we would simply keep the light off. You know, turn off the outside light, turn off the front lights in the house, towards the front of the house, and go to the back and play a game, watch a movie. That's how we grew up. That's what we did. And, you know, yet some people would still, I guess out of sincerity and interest, they would still knock on the door. A totally dark house, they'd still come up. You'd think most wouldn't. But I just wanted to mention that October 31st is a great day for me. I've always enjoyed it as much as any other day, because my son was born that day. So I look forward to October 31st, not the part of Halloween, but, you know, having a new child, a new son in the house. And, you know, as my son grew up and went to school at a young age, and even in high school, all the kids would tell him when they found out his birthday was on Halloween, they said, "I wish I was born on Halloween." So it's interesting what people think and how they look at the holidays of man. So my title today is God's Perspective on Halloween. You think about the many American traditions and how they're viewed as harmless. You know, oh, that's just fun, or that's just family time, whatever the things we hear. And yet the scriptures clearly defined what is good. God tells us what is evil. He tells us what is unholy, what is holy. And we have to consider that closely. So my focus today is to look at the origins of Halloween and to compare that background of this holiday with the scriptures, to see what man does and what God thinks. Now, back in ancient times, Halloween actually marked the end of summer. So we kind of see that summer's ending, you know, Halloween's tomorrow. And in the 5th century BC, the Celtics in Ireland ended summer on October 31st. So that was their way of life. I would like to read a little bit from the Encyclopedia of Religion. Notice what they say about Halloween. Halloween, or All Hallows Eve, is a festival celebrated on the 31st of October, the evening prior to the Christian Feast of All Saints, or All Saints Day. Halloween is the name for the Eve of Samhain, a celebration marking the beginning of winter, as well as the first day of the new year, within the ancient Celtic culture of the British Isles. So I was surprised that it kind of derived from that area. The article goes on to say, besides Halloween, the Celts observed many other holidays, including the winter solstice, later transformed into Christmas, and spring fertility rites, reborn later as Easter. So a lot of things originated there. The encyclopedia also says on Halloween, it was believed that a gathering of supernatural forces occurred as during no other period of the year. So that was their mindset behind this. The eve and day of Samhain, the name for this, were characterized as a time when the barriers between the human and supernatural worlds were broken. So in other words, you could pass back and forth. And it goes on to say the souls of the dead were able to visit earthly inhabitants. And humans could take the opportunity to penetrate the domains of the gods and supernatural creatures. So somehow, because it's not in the Bible, man came up with these ideas. So this was the foundation of Halloween, a superstition that the dead or the spirits of the dead could visit people here on earth and vice versa. They could kind of enter their realm. Now, most of those who celebrate Halloween don't realize how it all started. You know, if not growing up in this church and our views on that based on the Bible, I wouldn't know. But many think that it's a very nice time of the year. People look forward to it. They spend a lot of money with costumes, etc. You know, they can say, well, we'll be together as a family, and it's cute to dress up our kids, and all their reasons. But, you know, years ago, I was living in Orlando, and what I would notice every Halloween is all my neighbors, they had this tradition. So when we moved into the area, we noticed it. They would all take their lawn chairs, go out to the end of their driveway, and sit there and wait for the kids to come by and give them candy, etc. And they would talk to each other. So, I mean, that was a great thing just to talk to one another, etc. But certain aspects then were okay, of the visiting with the people and so forth. But there's aspects, too, that aren't okay. Now, the encyclopedia also says that during this time back of the Celts, that they had sacrifices of animals, crops, and possibly human beings were made to appease the supernatural powers who they believed controlled the fertility of the land. So they were just idolizing here. They were trying to, some power that they thought had control over when it turned green and when winter came and all that, they were trying to appease that god. And so Samhain, the name for this holiday back then, acknowledged the entire spectrum of non-human forces that roamed the earth during the period. So these are the original ideas that led to the holiday that we have today. I mean, that's quite a foundation, or a lack of a foundation, that has been built on. And most who celebrate today have no idea how this nationally accepted celebration began. And so it's good that we can look at that and compare things to the Bible. Now, some of the things they did back at that time, and that over the years morphed into other things a little bit, but they used to build huge bonfires on the top of the hills. And the reason they did that was to scare away the evil spirits, and they would also then dress up in costumes and masks, hoping to disguise themselves from these evil spirits, as if that would do any good. But that's where a lot of these traditions came from. And so these traditions reveal the type of spirits that are associated with Halloween. Not God's spirit, not angels, but evil spirits, as it even said here. So today, Halloween traditions can be traced back to these superstitions. And as we think about it, all those items, as we consider, especially as Christians and reading the Bible, they don't fit with what God says. So let's look at a few scriptures. Let's begin in Ephesians 5 and verse 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 5. Now consider for a moment, as you're turning there, the number of people who observe Halloween. I mean, they look forward to it. They think it's great. They decorate things. They buy costumes for it. All this work for this one evening. And so let's notice what God says here in Ephesians 5, verse 5. He says, "For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God." So those things should really hit us hard. Like, if you want to practice these things, you will not be in the kingdom. Now, notice it mentions an idolater. I looked up that word in the dictionary, and here's the meanings it gave. One is, it's a worshiper of idols. So I think we're knowledgeable of that. Here's a second definition. A person that admires intensely and often blindly one that is not usually a subject of worship. So it's another way of wording it, but you know, to blindly worship something that is, let's say, a piece of stone or a piece of wood carved into something, and yet you think about the first commandment, you shall have no other gods before you. So it goes directly against what God is saying. And we know that God, and only God, is worthy of worship. You know, God placed in man the desire to worship, I believe. I mean, if you think about how many people want to worship something, it's not always directed, right? We have people that worship the actors, you know, in the movies, the famous people that sing songs, the athletic people, they worship almost anything. You know, they carve something out of stone. You even look at the stories in the Bible, and they make something out of silver, and they bow down to it. So God placed in us that desire, but the people didn't stop to listen in how God said to worship and who he said to worship. Let's read verses, starting verse 7. We'll read a few verses here and continuing in Ephesians 5. Verse 7 says, therefore, do not be partakers with them. So anything that goes against God, we need to make sure we don't follow that. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. So it's so important that we follow God's ways because he is a God of light, and he's inviting us to do that. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. So as Christians, that's our goal, to find what our Maker, our Creator, wants us to do. And then it says in verse 11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. Therefore, he says, awake, you who sleep. So as Christians, if we're spiritually awake, God is inviting us to kind of get going, to wake up, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. So this is available to us, and we really have to consider what God has called us to and the blessing of that. But we've got the world around us that continually pulls at us, wants us to come back into the world. And so Satan is all about darkness. And as we look at the scriptures, we see that God is all about light. And so we should consider that. Let me read a little more from the Encyclopedia of Religion. It says, this autumn festival, referring to Halloween, acquired sinister significance with ghosts, witches, hobgoblins, fairies, and demons of all kinds said to be roaming about. So, I mean, this is what's in the encyclopedia. This is what's carried down through history. It goes on to say that this holiday, Samhain, remained a popular festival among the Celtic people throughout the Christianization of Great Britain. And the British church attempted to divert this interest in pagan customs by adding a Christian celebration to the calendar on the same date. Isn't that amazing? So they added the Feast of All Saints, which commemorates the saints of the Christian religion, just as Samhain has acknowledged and paid tribute to the Celtic deities. So it was just a way to trick people to continue with their pagan ideas. And ancient Halloween practices still exist today. I mean, we see them maybe in varied form, even here in 2021. I'll just mention a few things that have been done over the centuries. Bobbing for apples was originally a form of divination, a way of fortune telling. Like, oh, you do this, it'll tell you something. The jack-o'-lantern, it represented a watchman on Halloween night or a man caught between the earth and the supernatural world. So all these things have meanings, even though people might do them, they don't always recognize the foundation. Tricking or treating. People treated the evil spirits with sacrifices so they wouldn't do harm. And so as people trick or treat, they don't recognize that there was a time when all this tied in with evil spirits and they didn't want harm from them, so they tried to appease them. And as we look at this holiday, we realize it can seem harmless, just looking at the surface of it. But let's consider God's views on pagan traditions. Please turn with me back to the Old Testament. We'll go to Deuteronomy chapter 12. Deuteronomy 12 and verse 29. You know, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt. God called them out. And as they did, they saw his miracles, powerful, mighty things that no one had seen anything like that, at least most people hadn't. And they were told, do not go after their gods, the gods of the people like Egypt and the promised land. And so let's notice here in Deuteronomy 12, some of the instructions that God gives. We'll read verses 29 down to 31. It says, when the Lord your God cuts off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you displace them and dwell in their land, take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? I also will do likewise. So God already knew what man would do. because he warns them before they even get into this to be careful. He knew their tendency. Verse 31, you shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. For every abomination to the eternal which he hates, they have done to their gods. For they burn even their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. So brethren, think about this. You know, we know that Satan is the god of this age. We know he's deceived the whole world. He's blinded people. And mankind worships almost anything but the true God. Now, one of the ways people worship is to appease the gods by giving the gifts and offering sacrifices, as we read in this encyclopedia. But can you imagine how disgusting it is to take your child and to throw them in a fire as a burnt offering, I guess you'd say. But I mean, this is the mindset of man apart from God when we don't follow what he says. And you know, whether our child's life is taken by fire or abortion, you know, it's an abomination to God, who's the giver of life. Verse 32, whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You shall not add to it nor take away from it. So clear delineation here of what man should do, and especially the Israelites. And the majority of man's holidays are an affront to God. You know, we know Satan promotes his ways. He perverts everything he touches, and he wants all of us to lose out on eternal life. And yet God's inviting us to walk that way. He's helping us. He's patient with us. Let's go a few chapters forward to Deuteronomy 18, and we'll look at a little more of God's instruction. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 9. So here's the instruction we have here. When you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft, or a soothsayer, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one who conjures spells, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls upon the dead. There's quite a few things listed there, but all of these are an abomination to God. And so God's warning here, he says, don't associate with the demonic realm. And Halloween is based on this. I mean, that's what their definition basically is by an encyclopedia. And yet in many U.S. cities, as you travel through them, probably over the years, I've seen signs for fortune tellers, palm readers, etc. You know, I had a neighbor years ago that told me how he was invited to a party, and he went, and he said, when we got there, I didn't know what we were going to do, just hang out, talk, have fun. He said they started to have a seance. And he said, we all sat down. He said, weird things really started happening. He said, I had to leave. And this is somebody not following the Bible, not called. This is somebody just saying how creepy it was to see demonic influences at this party he was invited to. And so God is warning us, don't even get near these things. Don't be pulled into that. Verse 12, for all who do these things are an abomination to the eternal. And because of these abominations, the Lord your God drives them out from before you. Look at that. The reason these nations lost their land is because they were idolatrous and they were practicing all these things it mentions. And so he removed them. Continuing in verse 13, you shall be blameless before the Lord your God, for these nations which you will dispossess listen to the soothsayers and the diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not appointed such for you. So God gave the land to the Israelites, and we know they let down and they eventually went into this way as well. He followed those who were led by evil spirits, not by God's spirit. Let's go next to Leviticus 19, as we just kind of tie a few scriptures here together, showing, you know, some of the things that God never intended for man to get into. Leviticus 19 and verse 26. Leviticus 19, we'll begin with verse 26. It says, you shall not eat anything with the blood, nor shall you practice divination or soothsaying. So once again, a reminder continually about this. Let's skip down to verse 28. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor tattoo any marks on you. I am the Eternal, God says. So he says, these things don't worship me. This is what I want you to stay away from. And so we're told in other scriptures that the life is in the blood. And so that's why, as Christians, we know that we properly drain our meat. God tells us not to eat the blood. And yet there's a tradition of doing that in society. We also see in society other things, as it mentions soothsaying and divination here again, that there are those who look to vampires and follow them and read books and watch movies about them as entertainment. And yet, you know, they suck the blood out of people. At least that's the way it's promoted. And God says, don't even go down that path. Don't even think about it or fantasize on that. And so we have to be careful as Christians in this world not to be pulled into the little things. Let's look at verse 31. It says, give no regard to mediums and familiar spirits. Do not seek after them. To be defiled by them, I am the Lord your God. So, brethren, humanity doesn't realize how wicked it is to follow some of these things and to seek information from the evil spirits, from the mediums and the witches and the soothsayers, all those names it gave it, those who call up the dead, the diviners. These are all types of worship that Satan has instituted so that people would follow the God of this world. And so people seek revelation, but it's not of God. So that's the problem with it. We seek revelation. We can go to the Bible. We can go to the book of Revelation, which was given by the Father to the Son, to the angel, to John. That's the type of revelation we want, not what Satan is promoting. And so one way many seek after evil spirits is to read books, to watch movies, and yet they're promoted as harmless. So we have to be careful with that. Let's go to Leviticus 20, just a page or so forward, and verse 6. So Leviticus chapter 20, we'll read verses 6 and 7 to begin with. It says, and the person who turns to mediums and familiar spirits to prostitute himself with them, I will set my face against that person and cut him off from his people. Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am the Lord your God. This is what God is wanting for everyone, not just for us, but the whole world. He wants us to work towards this growth and development. And he's against anything that people practice, even watching that type of entertainment. You know, I know I've heard over the years members that have watched this and that, most of that most likely before they came in, but others, even after they're in, they let their kids watch it. So we have to be careful. And it's fair to say that we all want to be in the kingdom. We all want to receive the blessings that God has offered to us. And yet God has rules for receiving those blessings. So we need to consider that. If we look at verse 26 in the same chapter, Leviticus 20, verse 26, and you shall be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and have separated you from the peoples that you should be mine. So there's a purpose for all this, to separate from those things that God says, those will harm you, those will hurt you, your mind, your body, etc. We have to consider that. Verse 27, a man or a woman who is a medium or who has a familiar spirit shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones, their blood shall be upon them. So this is God's view of pagan customs and the penalty for dealing with evil spirits. Back in those days, they stoned the individuals. So a death penalty for practicing that way. Now, if we do that today, nobody's going to come and do the same thing. But God says, I'm your judge. I'm watching, and I'm asking you, I'm inviting you not to walk this way. So if you think about the Halloween origins, they tie in with, say, forms of satanic worship. And he's over all the evil spirits. I mean, the demons, a third of them followed him. And these evil spirits work ways to deceive and to control and so many aspects of human life. Now, it's not our job to go out and tell our neighbor, like, oh, you shouldn't be putting out those, you know, things for Halloween. You shouldn't be going to. No, that's not our job. God has to call and open the mind. So we have to think about that. We don't want to push people away, but we must abstain from it. And we must be a light in being different than the world with God's help and spirit. Turn with me back to the New Testament. We'll go to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Second Corinthians 11 and verse 13. So many of the holidays, as we look at them, as you study into them, we realize that they oppose God's holy days. I mean, they're so different, and yet Satan is almost, I even find interesting the term holidays and holy days. It's almost like Satan steals the name Christianity for what isn't. He takes the name holiday to almost sound like a holy day and makes like, well, we'll worship and do that on this day. So it's interesting how Satan has worked, even in ways we don't fully grasp. So 2 Corinthians 11, verse 13, it says, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works." So think about how many religions today actually promote many of the holidays that follow Satan, that expose these things. They promote ideas that are literally against the Bible. Their excuse, well, it's fun, it's family time, whatever. And yes, some of that's mixed in, but a deceiver always mixes in truth with evil. So that's where we have to be able to separate it out. We know that Satan is the author of confusion. He's the father of lies. And so as we consider that, he's controlling so much. He's tricked the whole world to worship him, and they don't even know. I mean, there's a few that call themselves Satan worshipers, but all these others that are following the spirits and looking to the mediums, etc., are literally following him. Now, many churches claim to be Christian, but they promote these ideas that are against the scriptures. So we have to study the scriptures. We have to be aware and understand them. And parents, it's your responsibility to teach your children the background of Halloween, to remind them year by year and the other holidays that are not proper, to guard them from the books that they might naturally want to read. Why? Because, oh, the friends at school read it. They go, "This is a great book. Read this. Oh, I saw this movie about the vampires, about whatever." And so as parents, it's a huge responsibility to remind and teach your children. At a church social in this congregation 2 years ago, before COVID, I saw some kids playing, and one kid was walking around, and he was following some other kids, and they were scared and screaming, and I couldn't understand what they were doing. So I just asked one of them, I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm a zombie, and I'm going to eat these other kids." And the other kids were acting scared. So he was presenting to be that, and I just thought I'd read from Wikipedia what zombies represent. Zombies are featured widely in Haitian folklore as dead persons physically revived by a sorcerer or a witch. So when you think about that, how evil it is, and yet look at the people that are drawn to watch a zombie movie, or the kids that are imitating in their play. So it's very revealing. It goes on to say a new version of the zombie emerged in popular culture during the latter half of the 20th century. In the late 1990s, the Japanese zombie video games of Resident Evil and The House of the Dead led to a resurgence of zombies in popular culture. And in the late 2010s, zombies are often seen as stand-ins for discriminated groups struggling for equality, and the human-zombie romantic relationship is interpreted as a metaphor for sexual liberation and taboo breaking. Now, when your kids watch a movie, they have no idea what's built into the definition of this, what it stands for, what they're being indoctrinated into it. So, you know, to the parents and even to the children, be careful what you watch. The satanic world doesn't play around, and God is warning us to stay away from that. And so I thought I'd share that, because if children are pretending to do that, most likely they're watching that in the home or at the friend's house, they're watching it, whatever. And yet that first statement I read from Wikipedia, zombies are featured as dead persons physically revived by a sorcerer or witch. So do we really want our children playing that type of game? Do we really want them thinking about that? No. And the Bible clearly warns us to stay away from demonic realm. A Let's go next back to 1 Samuel 28 as we look at some real live examples of, you know, situations that happened that were against God. 1 Samuel chapter 28 and verse 3. Now Saul was the first king of Israel. God appointed him, and at the end of his life, he went astray. He compromised in several ways. He was told to annihilate the Amalekites at one point, but he spared the king, King Agag. He spared some of the sheep. He blamed the people. Oh, they took the plunder. So Saul, you know, had his difficulties. But let's notice here an account. Now, he got really off track at the end of his life. 1 Samuel 28 and verse 3. It says, now Samuel had died, and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah in his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. So that's a good thing. That shows they were there, and now he's removing them. Then the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel together, and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. So he has a great fear here, and you can see where he might want to go back to what had been in the past. And it goes on to say, and when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams, or by Urim, or by the prophets. So he had been sinning enough, like it says in Isaiah 58, that God separates us if we continue to sin. So he wouldn't answer him. But then verse 7, Saul said to his servants, find me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, in fact, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor. So Endor, I might just mention, is a city southwest of the Sea of Galilee. It's within the Israelite kingdom, so there was still knowledge of some mediums, even though they put out the majority. Verse 8. So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes, and he went, and two men with him. And they came to the woman by night, and he said, please conduct a seance for me and bring up for me the one I shall name to you. So I think all of us are aware, we can see beginning signs here, major problems. You know, the king going to a medium, holding a seance, not good at all. Verse 9, then the woman said to him, look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the spiritists from the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul swore to her by the eternal, saying, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. And so I find that amazing. You know, it says here that Saul swore by God's name that she would live. And yet, what did God say? He said she should die. I'll just refer you to Exodus 22 and verse 18. And there it says, you shall not permit a sorceress to live. No exception. You know, that evil shall be put out. And so he was directly going against these commands of God. Verse 11, then the woman said, whom shall I bring up for you? And he said, bring up Samuel for me. When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, why have you deceived me? For you are Saul. So even this demon reveals to this lady who this is, that it's the king, and he had tried to disguise himself. And the king said to her, do not be afraid. What did you see? And the woman said to Saul, I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth. So he said to her, what is his form? And she said, an old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down. So all sorts of things are happening here, and they're all not good. I mean, you don't bow down, even if that had been Samuel, which it isn't. It's a spirit that comes up, an evil spirit, that he's bowing down to an evil spirit, actually. So you think about all the facts that are going on, but misstep after misstep, Saul, and God reveals this story for us to make sure we don't even go into a situation like this. Continuing in verse 15, now Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? So this is the demon speaking to him. And he answered, I am deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore. So see, this isn't of God. Even Saul is admitting it. He doesn't answer me. So he should know this is some other spirit answering him. And he says, God has departed from me and does not answer me, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore, I have called you that I may reveal, that you may reveal to me what I should do. So going to Satan, going to the evil spirits to figure out what to do, what a sad state to be in. Verse 16, then Samuel said, so why do you ask me, seeing that the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy? And the Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David. Because you did not obey the voice of the Lord nor execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek, therefore the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines. Boy, this isn't what he wanted to hear. You know, he was trying, because of that original fear and going, you know, to a medium, he's trying to get answers that he'd want to hear, but now he's hearing sad things. And it says, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. In other words, you'll be dead. You'll be in the grave. The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Verse 20, immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no food all day or night. So I'll just end that story there. But the point is that Saul, going to a person who, through the evil spirit, brings up a vision that she has to reveal to Saul. He couldn't even see the person. So many things are happening here. And so this woman eventually has a meet, and he goes on his way. But if we were to continue to read in chapter 31, you know, there is that battle with the Philistines, and Saul is wounded, and then he commits suicide. His three sons are killed that day. What a sad ending. You know, Israel loses the battle. And here's the king, the leader of the land, the one who should be guiding the people to God. He's literally leading them away from him. So let's go to 2 Chronicles 33 next. I just wanted to read that as an example that people of God, Saul, a king of God over his nation, we can fall into this. We have weaknesses, and we have to be very careful. Now, here in 2 Chronicles 33, we'll begin in verse 1. There's so many things that take place in the Bible that we could look at, but let's just notice a few words here. This is about King Manasseh. Doesn't start out so well, but it ends up well. So Manasseh was 12 years old, verse 1 of 2 Chronicles 33. He was 12 when he became king, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. But he did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. For he rebuilt the high places with Hezekiah, his father, that he had broken down. He raised up altars for the Baals and made wooden images. And he worshiped all the host of heaven and served them. So not a good thing at all. And so Israel and Judah had shared, you know, had their share of leaders like this, where they would just lead the people down the wrong path. And a nation tends to follow the king to a degree. You know, there's always those that stand up against this. And with that, I'll just throw in the U.S. is really headed down the wrong direction as well. And so we have to think about all these things that God warns. And let's continue in verse 4. He also built altars in the house of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, in Jerusalem shall my name be forever. And he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the eternal. So this is God's house. He's basically worshiping Satan and his demons in the very house that God called his. Verse 6, and he caused his sons to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. He practiced soothsaying, used witchcraft and sorcery, and consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. So not good at all. But he does have a change, and we'll come back to that and look at that in a minute. And let me just read a couple other verses before we go to another scripture. We'll read starting in verse 9. So Manasseh seduced Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. And the Lord spoke to Manasseh and his people, but they would not listen. And so this is mindful to us to remember that we have to listen to God. So they didn't listen. In verse 11, Therefore the Lord brought upon them the captains of the armies of the king of Assyria, who took Manasseh with hooks, bound him with bronze fetters, and carried him off to Babylon. So if we don't follow God, if we don't really be careful in what we do, who we serve, we as a nation are going into captivity, and I don't want to be a part of that. You don't want to be a part of how much is going to happen during the Great Tribulation. And so the Israelites went into captivity for their sins. Let's go to Ephesians 2. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2. And hold your place there if you can in 2 Chronicles 33. We'll come back and finish that story. Ephesians 2 and verse 2. Just a reminder of how Satan is working behind all the scenes, and he has more influence than we realize. We're told to stay awake regarding his deceptions. Let's just read verses 2 and 3. It says, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. This describes all of us. Before God opened our minds, before he calls us, this is how we naturally are. And we have to be mindful of that. Go now to chapter 6 in Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 6, and we'll look at verse 10. You're very familiar with this, so we'll just touch on, let's even just read verse 11. It says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. God is inviting us to take this path because it helps us to recognize the schemes of Satan and to be able to stand up against it. And you know, it continues with the pieces of armor, the spiritual armor that God provides that he wants us to really put on daily and not take off and say, ah, that's a little heavy or a little cumbersome, I'll take it off. No, God says, you better be wearing that, because as it says, I'll just even read verse 12, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. So other men and women are not our enemies to the degree the spirit world is, but we wrestle against principalities and powers and against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. So if we would just remember this, when we think about sorceries and mediums and spiritists, if Saul only would have remembered this, that there's an evil influence and we need God as our protector. And we have to consider that every day. So we're offered that protection, but do we put it on? Do we study and pray and do those things that would invite God to put on, you know, to help us put on the shield of faith or the helmet of salvation or the belt of truth? Let's go back to 2 Chronicles 33. 2 Chronicles 33. And I bring this story up. It's similar to Saul's, but it's almost the reverse of it. Saul was moving along and then turned worse and worse. Manasseh was really bad. And then he has a repentant heart. Probably that captivity and how bad that was woke him up. So in 2 Chronicles 33, let's read verse 12. Now when he, Manasseh, was in affliction, he implored the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. And he prayed to him, and he received his entreaty, heard his supplication, and brought him back to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. And so even people that fall prey to the demonic realm, if they're willing to repent, God says, here's a path. I provide a way back to me to draw close, to build a relationship. And this is what God is inviting us to be mindful of, not to go that path. And so it continues to tell more in this chapter, and I won't go any further, but you know, God provides this way, and we have to make sure that if we don't want to lose out on eternal life, that we're very careful and mindful of the words that God has laid out for us. And so my question with Manasseh, you know, he did repent, but what if he would have repented sooner? He may not have had to go into captivity, to go through all that pain and suffering. So the question is, we all have things that we need to change, to repent of, that God says, you're not quite in line with my way. And so will we wait until captivity? Will we wait until the great tribulation, until we wake up? I hope not, myself included, that God is asking us to really wake up now make those changes so that we're ready for his kingdom. I'll just refer to 1 John chapter 4 and verse 1. It says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God." Why? He says, "Because many false prophets have gone out into the world." So there is that spirit of truth, there is that spirit of error. And we have to stay close to God so we can recognize it, as it says here, test the spirits. So let's go to 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 19. You know, the author of James, James himself, the half-brother of Christ, reminds us in his book, in chapter 4, to resist the devil. And it says when we do that, he will flee from us. And then we're told to draw near to God. And when we do that, God says, "I'll draw nearer to you." So there's these steps that if we take and follow God's word, it actually blesses us greater than what we do. You know, it causes Satan to run away and it causes God to draw closer. So 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 19. I might just mention, you know, when our friends and our families and others observe these traditional holidays, we really need to stop and think about, you know, the process of what's happening. Like I said earlier, to remind our children, to compare what God has said with what man is doing. Now, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 19, it says, "What am I saying then?" So we're breaking into a thought, but that an idol is anything, or what is offered to idols is anything. And we all know that an idol, I mean, you could carve out a false god over here out of silver or wood or stone. It's nothing. It's just a piece of stone, but people think it is. So Paul is revealing that. So is it anything? He says, rather, here's what he's really trying to get across, that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. And I do not want you to have fellowship with demons. So when we do things that oppose God, we're literally inviting a relationship with this demonic world. Verse 21, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and the table of demons. So God says you've got to choose. You know, you're either my camp or that camp, but you can't kind of say I'm over here, but I'll kind of stick a foot over in this and go to this seance or go get my fortune told or have somebody read my palm and the tarot cards and all the things man does. God is saying you're either one camp or the other. And so we're reminded here not to observe pagan religious practices. We know that Satan deceives us by mixing good with evil. So we have to be very careful to differentiate that. And we know that many of man's customs, his traditions, are an abomination to God. Not all of them. I mean, we'll be observing Thanksgiving, a time to thank God, a time to thank others, but many of the other holidays are an abomination. And we know that God won't dwell in us if we continue to do those things against him. Let's close with 1 Corinthians chapter 3, just back a few chapters here in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 16. We read a similar statement back in the Old Testament about being holy. Let's notice what it says here by Paul in 1 Corinthians 3, 16. Because think about in the old days, God dwelt in the tabernacle. You know, he wanted to be among his people. Later, after the tabernacle, he dwelt in a temple. Today, what a blessing, but God can dwell in us. As Paul writes here, 1 Corinthians 3, verse 16, "Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you?" So if we don't know that, we better wake up to it, because that is an awesome blessing that we all, including myself, we've taken that for granted at times, and we have to really think about that. And so God is willing to dwell in us. Verse 17, "If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are." Brethren, God has labeled this for us to read, to understand, to practice his ways. What a blessing that is. And we know that God gave us life. He invites us to join his family. And we could go on and on with the blessings that are built into this plan of God, that he wants each one of us to wake up and really run this race faster than we've ever run. Like, but with endurance, to make it to the very end, not get burned out, but to look at the Bible, to study it, to break down the unholy, the holy. to consider what is not of God and what is. And it can be confusing because as your children go to school, they see all kinds of things. And even in the homes, if we're not careful, if we're not careful with entertainment or books that we've read, they might get a mix up there too. Like, we have to really define that out carefully so our children, as well as us, are staying on the right path. So in conclusion, let me just say, let's be careful with what we do. Three things I'll mention. Be careful with what we read. You know, let's not be reading anything that invites, you know, has witchcraft in it, sorcery, mediums. The world makes that as, I heard people years ago reading certain books. They said, oh, this is great. I don't care what my kid reads. It's getting them to read. No, I'd rather my child not read than to read about sorcery and mediums and evil spirits. Let's be careful also with what we watch. You know, the horror movies about zombies and vampires and fortune telling and all the things that are promoted through that. You can sit there and it might even be entertainment. It might be laughable the way they present it. But God is saying, don't do it. It's an abomination. And then also, let's be careful with what we take part in, such as the traditions of man. You know, Halloween, for instance, Easter, Christmas, those things that have pagan origins that you don't have to search very hard to go look and see the basis of what that holiday was built on and how it's not of God. It's of a different mindset. And we must do these things because Satan is a deceiver. He's a liar. And he blinds people. And we can be blinded. We are human. We can be blinded. So God is inviting us to awake and be in the light. So as we draw closer to the kingdom, let's continue to come out of this world and invite God to help us to grow, to develop, so that we can be holy. Please have a great rest of the Sabbath.